Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Gail, and I'm an alcoholic. The script says I'll be your host for the month of May, but I'm going to say I was your host for the month of May, and May is almost over. When Nikki Baldwin told me for this job for the month of May, I thought, oh my God, the whole month of May, I've got to find speakers. And it's over. It's done. Oh my God. Thank you all so much. So this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday and on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. Today's daily quote, and I just loved this one. It touched my heart. May 27th. I know that I am not a total loss, even when I think I am. I know that freedom and usefulness, love and outgoingness and sharing are the important things in life. And that's from New Canaan, Connecticut, April 1976. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as an email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine for May, and it's on page 53, hitting the pause button. They were just trying to help out. He was sure they were yelling at him. Time to reset. If I follow my sponsor's advice and admit that I'm no longer running the show and that maybe I need to try giving others the right to be different, I'm employing tolerance. And then a little reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 133. Now about from the family afterwards. Now about health. A body badly burned by alcohol does not recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. We who have recovered from serious drinking are miracles of mental health. But we have seen remarkable transformation in our bodies. Hardly one of our crowd now shows any mark of dissipation. So this is a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees. So please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And before I introduce our first speaker, Julie, I want to let her know that the first speaker gets to close the meeting with a prayer of their choice. So just, I forgot to tell you that earlier, Julie. So with that, please take it away, Julie.
Thank you, Gail. My name is Julie. I am an alcoholic. And I'm extremely grateful to be here and can't wait to hear Robert, somebody that I've met recently and enjoy the short amount of time I've got to spend with him. And thank you so much for including me in this grapevine. I often forget to say, so I wanted to just share my experience with Grapevine that was so profound for me, and then I'll get into my story. I got sober in San Francisco and then moved to a small town, and we have Spanish speakers in our meet in our town, but we don't have any Spanish speakers in our meetings, and we were trying to figure out how to be welcoming to Spanish speakers, and we got a Spanish big book, and we thought, well, how do we talk to them about this when we can't speak Spanish? So we got Lavinia. We got a subscription to Lavinia so that if somebody comes into our meeting, we can give them the phone number of the Spanish-speaking intergroup and a Lavinia, and they can walk away with something. So I just wanted to share that in case I forget, because sometimes I just go into a little la la land. So, again, my name is Julie. I'm an alcoholic. I like to say that I was adopted at the ripe old age of 3 weeks, and it's a major part of my story. So I like to mention it. Besides, I get to be somewhat Canadian because my parents were Canadian. The reason why I mention it is because I felt different. I felt different and unique and separate from the humans. I thought that I was literally, they told me I was adopted because I was here from another planet. I've heard people say that. I believed it to my core, that there was something so unique about me and different and separate from. And I had this loneliness that was so deep inside of me. And so that's a major part of how I developed as a human being. I had no friends. I was lonely, but I was somewhat responsible. And so my world was, a lot of conflicting dichotomies. I would babysit the neighborhood kids and drink while I was there, so they would hire me to babysit their kids. And then that was my first sneaky drink, was babysitting. I think I was 13 years old, and I couldn't get the little kid to go to sleep. And so my dad was a drinker. And so it occurred to me that I could just put some vodka in her milk. And now this is an interesting statement. She was 3 years old and she said, "Tastes like there's wine in my milk." And I thought, that's an odd thing for a three-year-old to say. But anyway, it occurred to me, wait, maybe I should have a drink, because she didn't really like it. And I drank it and I got drunk and I felt freedom. That's what alcohol did for me, was I felt the release from being from another planet, the loneliness, the anger, the isolation. It was my cure. And I couldn't wait to find more. So from the age of 13 on, and as I said, I was kind of, I didn't have any friends. I was a nerd. So I had a hard time finding booze, except I would steal my father's booze. If you put water in a big vodka thing, they know. So he blamed the neighbor, because how could it be his, nerdy little daughter doing that? But it was. I did not get along with people, but alcohol did allow me to do that. Alcohol gave me so much before it took it all away. It gave me the ability to have conversations with human beings, even when I wasn't drunk. It just relieved me of all that isolation and stress that kept me away from my fellows. So I drank as much as I could, as often as I could, which wasn't as often as I wanted. And then I did not get along with my mother. I had the privilege to go to a boarding school, which some people thought was a punishment. But for me, to get away from home, from mom, was yippee. And I went to a boarding school, and it continued the narrative in my head that I was different. I was, something was wrong with me. And But by the time I was 18 years old, I went away to college when I was 17. I picked a state in the 70s. There were states that had 18 drinking law. I picked a state that had an 18 drinking law. I went back to Massachusetts. I drank the entire year. I passed two classes out of the goodness of the heart of the instructors, came back to California, and alcohol quit working for me at the ripe old age of 18. And what I mean by that when I say that is that I would drink and not get drunk. I was physically drunk. I was slurring my words, but my head felt like it was as clear as a bell, and I got no relief. And the alcohol quit working for me. And then I've told people before, you know, that's kind of an opportunity to get sober for a lot of people. And if you keep drinking through it, it will change. if you drink through that opportunity. And what happened is that it started becoming unpredictable. And that was the way it was for me for the next 9 years. And I got sober when I was 27. And for that last 9 years of my drinking was the most miserable drinking. The most I ever did was when I was 17 and 18 and in 18 drinking law, Massachusetts. I drank all the time. And when I was, so for the next 9 years, I attempted to control my drinking. And I would say, if I drink now, I'm an alcoholic. If I don't drink now, I'm not an alcoholic. And so it was this constant, even though I wasn't consuming as much, I was in, I was constantly obsessed with when I was going to be an alcoholic and when not. It's a terrible way to drink. It's a miserable way to drink. So at 27, I just because it's somebody's name. There was a TV program that had somebody get sober, and it flashed the National Council on Alcoholism's phone number, and I called, and I have not had to have a drink since January 9th, 1986. And I got sober in San Francisco. How am I doing with time? I got sober in San Francisco. I was fortunate. I did not do young people's meetings. When I stopped drinking and as alcohol quit working for me, that anger returned, that isolation returned, that antisocial behavior, and I wanted nothing to do with young people in AA. They were too perky. They had fun. I wanted nothing to do with them. Give me the old cranky ones. That's me. So I went to meetings in San Francisco. I got a sponsor. It's funny. I like to say that I can count, you know. People were saying 90 meetings in 90 days. And so I would go to 7 meetings on the weekend because I can count. And they didn't say go to a meeting every day. They said 90 meetings in 90 days. So there's my arrogance. See it? There. On full display. And so I did get a sponsor after 5 weeks because I thought I was going to drink. I was out of town with somebody and I said, you know, maybe we can have a glass of wine. I was incessantly talking to him about the fact that I wasn't drinking, but I wanted to drink. And, you know, I didn't say I was going to AA. I just was incessantly talking about it. And he said, well, you could have a glass of wine. And I had not gone to enough meetings to know anything yet. But there was this instinctual, no, I don't think it won't be enough. I don't want one glass of wine. It will not be enough. And I came back and I was terrified and I asked this woman to be my sponsor. And, you know, we worked the steps and my life got better. I did not know I was powerless over alcohol. I did not know that my life was unmanageable. I did not walk into Alcoholics Anonymous having the first step under my belt by any stretch of the imagination. I had to learn. One of my funny stories that I like is sponsor was describing to me, she was just a few years older than I was, and she was describing to me her drinking, and I was identifying. And so I did the good newcomer thing. I'm like, wow, she drank just like me. She's not an alcoholic either. I got the identification thing. I just came up with the wrong conclusion. And I will tell you that the higher power thing was very challenging for me. I was raised, a rebellious, my mother was a recovering, I don't know if you could say, but she had some response to her religious upbringing. Let's just put it that way. And so there was a, I was taught to not respect anybody in any religion ever. And so that's what I knew when I got here. And so when there's this whole thing about getting a higher power, I'm like, oh, forget that. And so it took a long time. And that's okay, because there are so many helpful suggestions in AA, like pray for the willingness to be willing, whatever pray means. You know, just, you know, and open it just a little bit, and then put your big toe in and see. And so I had a filthy mouth, and so I used to swear at my higher power because that was the language in which I knew how to talk. And it occurred to me one day that I was actually having a relationship, because I was continually swearing at my higher power for the decisions that I had made. So I will quickly tell you that the steps for me were profound. I did find a higher power. The idea that I was responsible for the plight I was in was just very profound. Making amends is something I used to say that you could have like this revolving eight step. So if I did something that I was going to have to make amends for, I didn't do it. It was like this fantasy that I thought, you know, I would have trouble with driving, you know, people were the problem, others in their cars. And I would think, if I just hit their car and go to an ATM, is that okay? Does that work within the principles of AA? So just to get a picture of how screwed up I was when I got here. So, fast forward, sober San Francisco, at 15 years sobriety, I moved to a small town with my husband, who's also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We moved to this teeny tiny small town in Sierra Nevada's north of Tahoe. And that's where we have the Lavinia. And it was an interesting change, because in a city, if you get resentful, you just go to another meeting. You know, they're not acting right, I'm going to go to another meeting, screw them. And in a small town, you got to work it out. And it was a real gift. You got to work it out. I don't work things out with people by my nature. Only through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have I really learned how to get along with others. And incredibly through service. Because service, I've learned to listen to people who are different than me and not feel the urge to change their mind, but to just truly just listen to them and hear them and honor them. And it's amazing. So I want to get back to my little adoption thing. So when I was 50, I don't know how long I was sober, 23 or something like that, I found my birth mother through DNA, my Canadian birth mother, and I met that family. But the things that the precursors to doing that is that I had this long history of people abandoning me, women abandoned me in AA. And I couldn't understand it. And I had another incident where somebody I was sponsoring, or so I thought I was sponsoring, had a 1-year anniversary, and I was not invited. And I'm like, oh, and so it was like that abandonment. And I knew when that happened that this was but a symptom, but an opportunity. So I knew that I had to find my birth mother. And it wasn't that I had to find her. I'd been trying to find my birth parents since I was 20 years old. But and I don't know if this is true for all adoptees, but I think it is true for many. It's so difficult and painful, and it brings up so much stuff that you start and then you stop and then shut down, denial. And so I knew that I had to just keep searching, whether I found her or not. I just had to go through the process, because I couldn't take being abandoned by one more woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't take it. And I found my birth mother, and the healing that has happened for me is just beyond measure. And that's the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here not to drink. I came here because I was miserable. I thought that I was a unique kind of abandoned because I was adopted. I now believe that probably most everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous has abandonment issues. But I can handle it. And there was nothing that I did except for put one foot in front of the other, trust the process, stay honest with people. And I have this birth father who's 95 years old. I haven't met him. I talked to him for the first time last year. And he rejected me when I reached out and said I was his daughter. And he's like, I have no children. And I'm like, maybe one. And I have this weird kind of relationship with him. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. The person that I was when I got here, the broken, abandoned, isolating, lonely person, can now, with grace and dignity, approach people who, through no fault of their own, hurt me. Right? It was not their fault. And that kind of understanding and compassion is just way beyond what I ever could have expected from Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new, and welcome, welcome, welcome. And if you think you've got something that's uniquely different to you, there's a speaker who says, you know, if there's one thing we could pledge our allegiance to, it's, but I'm different. I can tell you that my abandonment that made me different and kept me separate from other members of AA, and it did. I did this, like, you don't understand. I really have abandonment issues. Welcome. Come in. Whatever you think that you're special, because we all do. We all have something. You know, be kind to yourself. Be patient. Give Alcoholics Anonymous a chance. Give the steps a chance. Give the fellowship a chance. I'm so grateful. I'm so excited. I get to hear Robert. We all get to hear Robert. Gail, thank you for asking me and including me. I'm really appreciative of this meeting. If you haven't had a chance, the people who are logged in, if this is your first time, there are podcasts of this, and I just really appreciate this meeting and this format. So thank you for the opportunity to participate today. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Julie. It's funny, you know, when we work together in service, we rarely hear the personal side of our stories. So I appreciate you being here. And I've had a Canadian in all four of my host responsibilities. And I was thinking, oh no, I've got two Americans, but Julie is actually Canadian at heart. So thank you so much, Julie. So before we go to Robert, I've got a couple of announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix, and you can find that pamphlet at AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free, well, not free, no cost to you, on all podcast platforms or on aagrapevine.org. Check out our primary purpose, the official podcast to the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube as well. And now our second speaker. Robert, I remember meeting you in 2025, just before the conference, and something about you touched my heart. So thank you so much for being willing to join us today. And with no further ado, please take it away.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gail. Yeah, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic, first and foremost. You know, I serve as the delegate to Area 19. For those who don't know what Area 19 is, that's Chicago. I am a panel 75 delegate, so I just served my last conference. You know, and I'm totally amazed. I'm totally amazed at the fact that I've been able to serve in this position in Alcoholics Anonymous, knowing where I came from. You know, my sobriety date is March 2nd of 2000. My home group is the Three Legacy Big Book Study Group meeting. We have a hybrid meeting. We meet on Saturdays from 5:30 to 7:30. For those that, you know, are able to, you know, might hear this podcast, we meet at the Evans Club at 319 East 75th Street. And, you know, we have we're a hybrid meeting. So maybe, you know, you might can join us online. You know, I'm totally amazed at what the program Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me in my life. Because I was not expecting this. And what I mean by this is the fact that I have had sobriety and I haven't had a drink of alcohol for 26 years. And I did not think that was possible for me. I was with a friend this past Saturday, and we were going to see another friend of mine, of ours, and he reminded me when we was in the car of the intervention that he tried to do on my behalf before I eventually got sober. And I recalled that day, and he did his best to, you know, tried to talk me into stop drinking that day. And it just went by. It went in one ear and out the other. So, you know, I understand today that recovery is based upon myself putting myself in a position to try to stay sober for another 24 hours. You know, I grew up about a half a block from the University of Chicago. And I grew up in a, you know, middle class neighborhood. And I had friends. I'm the only child. And my father served 20 years in the Air Force. And my mom, she worked for the government. And so, you know, they really did the best that, you know, they could in raising me. What was going on? There was some abnormal behavior in our household. You know, I am a product of domestic violence. And so that impacted my life, you know, and it affected the way I felt indifferent about Robert. I can recall that at the age of around 13 or so, I was at a party and this guy gave me a cup. And I really did not know really what was in the cup, or I just knew that, you know, it had some alcohol in it. So anyway, it was my first drink ever. And it turned out to be 151. And when I took that drink, all I remember was the drink going down my throat, burning. And all I remember was my knees buckling. And I just found myself, you know, bent down and just trying to figure out what was going on. And, you know, that night was profound for me, because the first thing I said was, you know, I'm not going to do that again. That's not going to happen to me again. And what I found about that night and taking that drink is that everything that was going on in my household had disappeared. Everything that was going on that I thought that was wrong with me, everything became all right after I had that drink. And, you know, it took days for that to, for me to figure that out. And, you know, I remember, you know, there's a place in Hyde Park here in Chicago called the Predominary Point. And it was a place where we used to go and hang out and friends. And, it, you know, we was in high school. And so drinking for me alleviated a lot of the problems that was going on in my life. And I thought it was social. You know, I didn't figure out really what was going on until I came in Alcoholics Anonymous and made a beginning on the steps. But at least at that point in time, I just thought it was social. I was hanging out with friends and, you know, we would be drinking and we were having a good time. And, you know, I was able to talk to the girls and, you know, they was talking to me. Things was fun. And it just became this way of life. And the way of life continued. It continued in high school. It continued definitely in college. You know, I, you know, there's a, you know, bits and pieces of my college experience that I really just cannot recall. You know, there was one of the things that I learned, and I was having a little trouble in school, especially in college, was the fact that I would find myself drunk before the exam. So when I got my exam back, my grade showed that I was drunk right before the exam. And so I figured out that you don't get drunk before the exam, you get drunk after the exam. And that's sort of how I got through school. I ended up working for a trading firm here in Chicago on one of the exchanges. And that's where I got sober at. You know, and my drinking, you know, working in the financial markets and drinking was just, you know, it was a way of life. You know, people met at the bar when the markets closed, you know. But, you know, one of the things that happened to me was the fact that, you know, you know, the market's closed at 3:15 and people meet up at the bar at 3:30. You know, 5 o'clock, people go home, and yet I'm still at the bar. And this went on for quite some time. And I ended up at that point, that job that I had, I ended up letting me go. And I said, fine, that's great. Now I can drink just the way I want to. And, you know, that went on for a couple of months. And when I figured out I had a problem with alcohol, I tried to go to practice organized religion. And I went and I tried to do that. But nevertheless, that did not keep me sober. I had to come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous first, and then I ended up eventually going back to practice organized religion. But in the meantime, I spent like 60 days from the time that I wasn't working. And then I went to treatment. I spent 6 days in detox. I spent another 35 days in the treatment, and I spent 10 and a half months in a halfway house where I had to learn how to live without the use of drugs and alcohol. And that was my introductions to Alcoholics Anonymous, as was being in this halfway house, because I was told that this is where you go. And it was a group of us. It was about 20 men. And, you know, we would go to meetings. And there was one day that I was told to go to the Mustard Seed, and which is on the north side of Chicago. And in that particular day, I got to the meeting maybe about a half an hour early. So when I walked into the meeting, and it was my first meeting ever, in life. And I walked into the meeting and I saw chairs in a circle format. And then there was one chair that was in the middle of that circle. And I was the only person that was in the room. I was only, you know, nobody, no members had showed up to the meeting. And I was just sitting there just frightened, because I'm sitting there trying to figure out, why are these chairs in a circle? And why is there one chair in the middle? And I'm sitting there saying, well, I know who's not going to be in the middle. And then, you know, and then momentarily, as we got closer to the start of the meeting, members started coming in, and, you know, and the person that was facilitating the meeting sat in the middle. And, you know, I sat, you know, in a chair that was in a circle. And I just continued to listen. You know, I really didn't know what I got myself into. I just heard, you know, people sharing their stories about drinking. And, you know, I wasn't sure what was going on. And then this lady, you know, gave me a big book, because I identified myself as this was the first meeting ever that I ever attended in life. So come to find out that the group bought me a big book. And so they gave me this book, and you know, immediately, you know, from my studying days, I just went to How It Works. I figured I can just read How It Works, and you know, whatever I was going through would be fine, and that would be it. Well, you know, that chapter, it took some time for me to figure out exactly what, you know, that chapter meant. So anyway, when that meeting was over with, I went back to you know, to the halfway house, and people really took me under their wings. And I remember this one guy, he told me, it was like a late Friday night, and it was, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And what he told me, he says, Robert, you know, if you don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk. And the light bulb went off in my head. You know, I talked about how my first drink was 151. But about the time I came into recovery, I was drinking 3 to 4 doubles of cognac when I came into this program, and if not more. And so it never dawned on me that it was the first drink. I thought it was the fifth double I had that sent me over the rails. It never dawned on me the fact that it was the first. And so that bit of information kept me sober until I was able to continue to read the big book that this group has, the group bought me. In the halfway house, one of the requirements was for us to attend the Three Legacy Big Book Study Group meeting at the Evans Club on Saturday from 5:30 to 7:30. And I did that. And as of today, I'm the only member from that particular halfway house that is still in that meeting. And once I read the doctor's opinion, it hit me what the problem was and what I was dealing with, because I had no idea what I was dealing with. I was prepared to just to go on to live my life just drinking alcohol, because I had tried stopping. I can't tell you the number of times I tried stopping on my own and couldn't. And so I just figured, you know, I'm not going to be able to stop drinking alcohol. And so this is just the way life and the cards I have been dealt. But when I read the doctor's opinion, the light bulb went off. And it gave me the opportunity to continue to read that book. And I remember, you know, reading Interactions, and we was talking, and you know, I you know, at this time I have not made a beginning on all the steps, but I remember in chapter in Interaction, and they was talking about step 5, and in that particular section it states that one of the reasons that you should do a step 5 is that you might return to drinking. I'm just sort of paraphrasing this. And I knew where my drinking had landed me. And so I said, well, wow, I better get a sponsor. And I did get a sponsor. My sponsor has been very patient with me. He still is patient with me at the, you know, as of today. But back then, I probably was maybe a year sober, and I was making a beginning on the steps. And when I got to step 4, you know, I just thought, oh, my goodness, how can I write about something about me and all the things that I have done to other people? And it was very frightening for me. And I never done anything like this before. And I can recall those days that I used to have to get up early in the morning, go get some breakfast, go to the library and write my step 4. You know, in this meeting, we used to have, and we still do have, a 4-step workshop where we write, you know, and go through our resentments, our fears, harms done to others. You know, it has been a blessing. And one of the things that I have learned about my character defects is that, you know, Robert is not a bad person. You know, drinking has caused or was the corporate to some of Robert's behavior. But I haven't had a drink in 26 years. You know, I always like to tell people the problems I have today are not the same problems that I have when I first came into recovery. Back to that job, you know, in the financial markets, when they let me go from the trading firm. And I ended up drinking just the way I wanted to those 2 months. When I came into went to treatment, the person that fired me rehired me. And I spent another 9 years on the financial on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for that period of time. But you know, I never would have thought that I could remain sober as long as I have. You know, my first service position, you know, I'm serving as delegate now, but my first service position was just standing at the door. And when members walked into the door, I would just write their names down for the comment portion of the meeting. And so that was my first service position. And I became the treasurer of our home group. I have become the GSR of our home group. I have had service positions at our district as the DCM. I had service positions in the district as secretary. And so it has been an honor and a pleasure for me to serve as delegate to the General Service Conference. A quick story, and then I'm going to close with this. You know, I was at the my first General Service Conference, which was the 75th General Service Conference, was my first time that I was back in New York for the first time in quite some time. I have family in New York, and the last time that I was there, I probably wasn't the best relative that I possibly could have been due to my alcoholism. And so once I found out that I had the opportunity to go back to New York, I was able to make amends to a family member for the time that I wasn't the best relative that I could have been. And this is what the program has given me. This is what the program has allowed me to do. I've been, you know, in the course of making amends. Some of my amends been accepted. Some of my amends haven't been accepted. But nevertheless, I can continue to stay sober, knowing that I have done the things that I have been taught to do in this program. And I've made a beginning on all 12 steps. And those 12 steps continue to help me stay sober one day at a time. And as a result of that, I have gotten married in this program. I have become a better father in this program. I have 2 kids. I become a better son in this program. And these are all the things that I knew that I had the potential to do, but I couldn't do it under the wrath of alcoholism. But I'm grateful for you people giving me another day to live sober one day at a time. And with that, I keep coming back. Thank you.
Oh, Robert, thank you so much. It's just wonderful. I remember talking to you about that amends you made in New York, or the
Yes.
meeting you had in New York. So thank you for sharing with us today. Just before I ask Julie to do a closing prayer, I want to remind you to please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And Chris, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to host the month of May. The joy that hosting this meeting has given me can't be put into words. It's just been amazing. Some amazing shares. Thank you. And now, Julie, if you would please close the final May meeting with a prayer of your choice.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you for this opportunity. I have to say that I'm not sure when I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I understand that somewhere in the Midwest, perhaps Chicago, one of the customs is to close the meeting with just a moment of silence. And I have tried that a few times at my home group, and I find it very comforting. So that's what I would like to do today, is to have all of us join in a reflective moment of silence, appreciative of our sobriety, or welcoming those who might be here for the first time. Thank you. Please join me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Julie and Robert. And I'm looking forward to whoever is hosting June. Thank you, Chris.